Gilbert, I met you when I was an executive recruiter for EMA, and at that time I had a position in philanthropy. I'd like to give to our auditors a bit more information about you, your success story. So maybe on my first question would be, why philanthropy? Why did you choose philanthropy as an accountant, as a professional in accounting?
So I thank you very much, Lily. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to the wider audience in the philanthropy community. I think philanthropy chose me in certain respects. It was really the convergence of the fact that I had a bachelor's in biochemistry and an accounting degree, and that kind of opened my opportunities to the research field in a hospital setting, as well as foundations, and then all the way into government, and then back into university foundations and philanthropy. So it's always been in the not-for-profit sector. Through there, really, my career blossomed and opened into very recently to being treasurer of Federation CGA, and as well as CASE International, which is the Council for Advancement and Support of Education. So it's been a wonderful, wonderful opportunity for me, and mm-hmm. allowed me to expand my horizons, not only in terms of philanthropy, but management, meeting incredible people, and driving really the mission of the organizations for which I worked.
You were talking about strategic volunteering on top of like having a successful career in philanthropy. So why you choose Federation and CGA? And for the listeners that don't know about it, can you please explain what's the purpose, the mission of this federation?
So Federation CGA is a Montreal organization that on average raises anywhere between $50 and $65 million a year, basically for the Jewish community, for social support network. It funds some 20 to 30 different agencies within the greater Montreal area. And that provides services, everything from feeding children to helping elderly Holocaust survivors, mm-hmm. and all the way to sheltered workshops for physically and mentally handicapped adults.
Very interesting. And I can add on that they fundraise in a very short period of time, right?
Right. So as they say, they have 9 months of engagement and 3 months of fundraising. So it's a challenge for sure, but the formula seems to work pretty well for them. And it's worked for the last 100 years, as it were.
And what did you learn from them that you apply after in your career at Concordia University or right now at your position?
Yeah, so the interesting thing there is my exposure to Federation has been as chair and recently as treasurer of Federation. And it's not easy. Obviously, the formula is you never have enough money for all the needs in the community. So how do you parsimoniously make decisions as to what to fund and what not to fund? So it's not the easiest thing, but also obviously working with incredibly talented people that have their eye on the ball, as it were. Their objective is common, so we all work to strive together to achieve the goals that we can.
Very, very interesting. Can you also please like explain to the listeners an example during your career as a director, as a vice president, an example of success, and maybe explain the team that was working with you, the budget that you were managing?
Yeah. So I think the best example I can give you is when I was at Concordia for almost 6 years. And that was really a question of rallying the troops. When I'd come on board, there were a lot of issues that had been dealt with within the team, but we grew it from 65 people to about almost 75, 80 people. One of the things that I'd come to realize is that, and I was involved with managing the advancement services, so mm-hmm. IT, HR, finance, budget, gift processing, and whatnot. One of the sectors that I also managed was prospect research, and something that had come to my attention was prospect research, rather than being a proactive entity at that stage, was more reactive. So whenever somebody wanted a profile on a donor, mm-hmm. they would go to it. I tried to change that in many ways, and ultimately what that meant was to try and harmonize the energies of all the different sectors. So whether it was alumni relations, development, and advancement services and communications as well, to work together to engage donors in a very targeted fashion. Mm-hmm. So that communications would do targeted marketing, alumni relations would do targeted engagement strategies.
Mm-hmm.
And what that means was that we at Prospect Analysis had to look for individuals with the same profile.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where things started to develop in a very interesting way with social media scraping,
mm-hmm.
profiling, and whatnot. So to mm-hmm. use the information on social media, based on the graduates, we had about 200,000, a little over 200,000 alumni in our database. So using that information in social media to gather cohorts of individuals that had the same profile.
Mm-hmm.
So individuals that were interested in football, for example, were all lumped together. That, you know, something like, and an easy example would be, you know, men between the ages of 35 and 50 mm-hmm. that were interested in football or that graduated from the Faculty of Business.
Mm-hmm.
So we would put profiles together and have activities and target marketing for those individuals specifically. And that would use the energies of all the sectors
mm-hmm.
to ensure that engagement of our alumni was maximized.
So it's kind of doing digital marketing strategies like the private sector, but applied to philanthropy, right?
100%. And that's mm-hmm. exactly the point, because otherwise, and we see this every day of our lives, right? Whether with YouTube or all the other social media platforms, they know exactly what it is that you like and what you don't like. So if you're not interested in ballet, you will not get messages or YouTube videos on ballet. Mm. It's just not something that's of interest to you. And they seem to know those
things.
Mm.
Talking about social media screening and profiling, and could you maybe talk a bit about the technologies that your department were using to accomplish?
So the amazing thing is, right? Thanks. So the amazing thing is that there are many, many services that are available for free. There are services that are available for nominal fees,
mm-hmm.
and there are services that allow you to test their services with a limited range of samples. So, and obviously, I wasn't the technical side of things, but the people that were doing it were able to, once we opened that field to them, were able to use those services on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
There are many companies that I mentioned, but one of them that comes to mind was iWave,
mm-hmm.
and they helped us tremendously. And many other companies that are also getting on board with that, realizing that that's something. Because you have to remember, most people don't spend in advancement in general and fundraising, don't spend that much money on the IT side of the equation.
Mm-hmm.
What they do is they use the IT as a database.
Yeah.
But the reality is it just holds a certain number of information that's not always as accurate as we would like it to be.
Mm-hmm.
So the best source nowadays of information is actually social media. People post everything from their profession to some individuals even post the type of toothpaste that they like. So it really gives you accurate information.
And sometimes we see like a gap between the French-speaking foundation and the English-speaking one, or the foundation that are much more national, that have a national, we can say national grasp or activities.
Yeah.
Could you please explain why we kind of see that gap and how maybe French-speaking organization can change the situation? What can they do today to change and to be much more progressive and to adapt to the reality?
Yeah. So I actually work now at something called the Institute for Clinical Research in Montreal,
mm-hmm.
and it's a French organization that was started about 50 years ago by a gentleman named Dr. Jacques Genet.
Mm-hmm.
They do fundamental and clinical research. The aspect of French and English, in my personal belief, is really that as fundraisers, we haven't done as good as work, if you will, to engage with our French community. So that in any society, Anglophone or any other society, we, the advancement professionals, have to go out there and engage with our constituents. If we don't do that, they will not be interested, because the fundamental principle successful fundraising really hovers around the relationship that you build with your constituents. The non-successful advancement shops are the ones that do it transactional. So depending on your philosophy, if all we do is just send cards out to people as a transaction, then that's the kind of results that we'll get. So we have to get out there and be more proactive in terms of our education of our constituents. One. Two, the Quebec Society has changed over the years, over the last 50, 60 years, and there is a real thing called Quebec Inc. incorporated in the province of Quebec. So, going after those individuals and aligning their vision with our vision or vice versa usually results in incredible things. And there are examples all over Montreal and all over Quebec of individuals from the Quebec Society, the French-speaking side of society, that have contributed enormously, wealth, their time, energies, and focus to helping the not-for-profit sector.
Yes, exactly, and we have a lot of amazing, as you say, donors and foundations and consulting firms in it and in this market. So we see a very beautiful growth in the sector for the last years, I think.
Absolutely, and I think as you said, it's a change in philosophy, both from the advancement side of things, and also individuals in the French community that have come to a certain stature in their wealth, if you will, and in their age, and have realized that giving back to society is really the only way to do it. And we're seeing incredible examples of that all over Montreal.
Yes. What would be, and this is my last question, your advice for a charity manager that is, like, let's say, in the middle of his career and wants to get promoted and strive as you did in your career?
That's a tough one. I think it's a convergence of the opportunity and the hard work. The only way I see that is, even through my career, there it's not every job that always allowed me to do and to think the way I think at present. The way I did it is really after about 5, 6, 7 years, I decided to switch. And I think you just have to have your finger on the pulse as to, at that point in your career, is that the opportunity, the job that you want? Is it allowing you the openings to try and experiment and to do things or not? Because it's, for me at least, it's a hugely competitive environment. Organizations now are going for, upwards, universities, in fact, across North America, are going for $1 to $5 billion and even north of that in terms of campaigns. So to be successful in this environment nowadays, you have to have the same business acumen as any major corporation, if you will.
Yes. And so, we see a professionalization in the sector and as well as the compensation that is now almost quite the same than the private. We see a shift and compensation is increasing in the sector.
Correct. So it will attract, high talent. It will attract individuals that are sharp, that are like-minded within the business sector. So people have to pull themselves up by the bootstraps and really, as you said, become as professional as possible, because we're evaluated. You have to remember that we're evaluated by a board of individuals that are mainly from the business sector. So when they come to the table, the same questions are asked of the not-for-profits that are asked of corporations.
Exactly. Definitely. Thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it. And
my pleasure.
all the best for the next opportunities or your next all the best for your career.
Thank you, and thank you very much for this opportunity. I think it will definitely help at least hopefully somebody, one person, to progress in their career.
Thank you.